This is the third part of The Good Life. 12. Judge Silver sat down in his chair and asked the bailiff to read the next case on the docket. Then he addressed the litigants and their lawyers. This is a custody hearing to determine who is fit to raise the infant, Ronald Harold Tuck. I want you to know that my decision is final and will be enforced by the full power of the laws of the state of New Jersey. Now, I know that the two of you have just gone through a rather unpleasant divorce hearing, but that's not the issue here today. Gentlemen, are you ready to proceed? Marjorie's lawyer and Harry's lawyer said that they were ready. Since technically Harry was the one trying to win custody of his son, his lawyer spoke first. Your Honor, we maintain that Harold Tuck has demonstrated his ability to be the custodial parent for his son. The boy has been living with his father since he was born and is used to the care that his father provides. The simple truth is that Marjorie Tuck abandoned her son when she moved out of their apartment on Gillette Place. Furthermore, she has shown a disregard for her son's safety by taking him from a park without notice or word to his father. Marjorie Tuck has been seen in the company of a variety of men since the time that she left her husband. Her ability to provide a secure environment for Ronald is questionable at best. Your Honor, my client is a hard-working man. He has been employed as a mechanic by the same company for 3 years. He was honorably discharged from the Army. He has roots in the community, and not even his ex-wife would argue about the love that he has shown for his son. We know that you will agree that he is the better of the two choices. The judge nodded and turned toward Marjorie's lawyer. Your Honor, the only way that Harry Tuck has been able to create any kind of stable environment for this child has been with the assistance of Mrs. Minna Daniels, who is the client's grandmother. For the last 6 months, she has stayed on at the apartment for the sole purpose of providing care for the infant Ronald. She has lived in the hope that Harry and Marjorie could resolve their differences. The recent divorce decree has put an end to that hope, and Mrs. Daniels has informed me that she intends to take up residence with her granddaughter at 780 Broadway. A child's natural place is with his mother, unless she has proven herself to be unfit. The only person here who has proven himself unfit is Harold Tuck. He is an adulterer, Your Honor. He was raised in an orphanage and has no idea of what family life should be like. We ask that you consider what this baby's life could possibly be like without the care of his mother and great-grandmother. Judge Silver nodded again. Well, what about it, Mr. Tuck? How could you provide a suitable environment for a young child? Harry looked up at the judge with surprise. It was one of the first times that anyone had asked him much of anything since this whole mess had started. I'd like to hire someone to come in and stay with him while I'm working. The judge leaned forward. Do you think that anyone that you could hire cared for him with the love and concern of his mother and a great-grandmother? I love him, Your Honor. He's my son. I'll always make sure that he was taken care of. I see. The judge turned his head toward Marjorie. Mrs. Tuck? Marjorie met his eyes and stood up. Yes, Your Honor. How do you intend to provide for the care of your son? Your Honor, I was taking care of my grandmother long before I ever heard of Harry Tuck. I'm glad that he loves his son. if he has shown the same respect for me when we were together, we wouldn't be here today." Harry wasn't letting that go by. "I do love you, Margie. Haven't I been begging you to come back for months?" Judge Silver tapped his gavel firmly. "Mr. Tuck, be quiet. You were given a chance to speak. Mrs. Tuck, I told you at the start that the issues between you and your ex-husband have already been resolved. Now, how is it that you intend to support your son?" "I work as a PBX operator, Your Honor." "And how long have you held this job?" "Only 2 months, but I've always worked hard, and I will always. I don't know." Here she felt things slipping away from her and began to sob. "What would I do if you took him away from me?" "The court isn't inclined to agree with you, Mrs. Tuck." The judge turned his head back toward Harry. "Mr. Tuck, do you have any other evidence to support the claim that she is an unfit mother?" Harry hated the sound of the words. Maybe he and Marjorie couldn't get along, but nobody had the right to stand up in public and say that either one of them was unfit. "No, Judge. I just do a better job with him." "The court does not agree with you, Mr. Tuck. We have found that except under extraordinary circumstances, children have more of a chance to thrive with their mothers." The words bit into Harry. He stared down at the wooden chair leg and his polished shoes and knew what would come next. "Accordingly, we grant custody of the infant Ronald Tuck to his mother. We order support payments in the amount of $15 a week." "I want to give 20, said Harry. He saw Marjorie look at him with her huge green eyes. The look was sad. Then he saw her turn her head back towards the judge. "Do we have anything else?" said Judge Silver. "No, Your Honor," said the lawyers. 13. Ronald Tuck sat in the front seat of a locked car. He was hunched against the passenger side door. He was watching the entrance to the Cloverleaf Lounge and counting the cars that passed by the place. His dad was inside fixing a machine. The neighborhood wasn't too bad. Harry would bring his son into the place with him to watch him work. The Cloverleaf Lounge wasn't a good stop for Ronald. The place had 3 pieces of equipment: a jukebox, a pool table, and a bowling machine. It was the bowling machine that was causing Harry trouble. He had been telling Sam for a month that they needed to bring the piece in and recondition it, but as long as it was making $200 a week, it wasn't moving. This was Harry's second time there this week. The work area in back of the machine was poorly lit and hard to get at. Harry had to climb over the alley portion of the machine each time he needed to get around to the back panel. If he had a partner with him, he could just pull the piece away from the wall. But Harry always worked alone on the weekends. Harry could feel the tension every time he stepped into the all-black club. Newark was changing. Almost 3/4 of his stops were in Puerto Rican or black spots. He could feel eyes on him when he did collections. He had started to carry a gun with his other tools in the trunk of his car. "Hey, man, how come you can step on the machine every time you come in here, and we ain't allowed to step on the machine?" Harry could smell the alcohol breath before he pulled his head out of the back panel. "What'd you say?" "I said, how come you can step on the machine and I can't step on the machine?" The man was bending over the alley, trying to get a look at what Harry was doing back there. "Because I'm trying to fix the damn thing. Harry stared out at the black face with a woolen cap pulled down to his eyebrows. It was 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and this guy was already staggering. Harry figured that the guy was still on a binge from the night before. With disgust, he thought to himself that the guy probably hadn't finished drinking his way through his entire paycheck yet, but that he would at some point over the weekend. The drunk weaved over to the bartender and repeated his question. The bartender said that he didn't know and walked over to where the man had been sitting at the bar. There was still some beer in the glass, but his shot glass was empty. There was still some money on the bar. The rule at the Cloverleaf Lounge was to serve them until they were broke and then get rid of them. The man wandered up and down the bar, incessantly asking his question. Finally, he came back to Harry. "Hey, mister." Harry pulled his head out of the back panel again. "How come you can step on the machine and I can't step on the machine?" Harry brought himself further out from the miles of wire and relays. His ears had gotten red. "How about this? If you step on the machine, I'm going to break your ass." Heads turned from the bar. The bartender reached underneath to get a grip on his baseball bat. Somebody laughed in a gravelly voice, and one of the customers let out a soft whistle. The man spun back toward the bar. "Did you hear what this white motherfucker said to me? Did everybody hear what this white motherfucker said?" Heads nodded, and then turned back away from the drunk. Harry planted his feet and waited. Suddenly, the drunk lunged and made a grab for him. Harry swung his aluminum flashlight hard and caught him full on the side of his head. There was a cracking sound. The drunk went down on the spot, and his cap rolled onto the floor. A small pool of blood began to gather by his ear. Harry closed the back of the machine and locked it up. Two guys came over from the bar and lifted the mumbling man up and carried him to a table in the back. He was mumbling about how someone had to come in back of him and hit him with a baseball bat. "I'll come back in the morning and finish up the machine before you open up." "What am I supposed to do about tonight? Saturday night is our business time." "That's your problem now," said Harry. "You should have gotten this guy out of here as soon as he started with me." Harry knew that he was on firm ground. Sam had told them what to do if they were bothered. Harry wished that Ronald wasn't waiting outside in the car in a neighborhood like this. "Put up a sign so nobody loses any money on it." Ronald's count had gone over 100 more than twice by the time Harry got back to the car. When the boy saw his father's face, his heart began beating faster. Now that they could talk again. "How did it go, Dad?" "These people are animals. They're drunk at 11 in the morning." "Maybe it's not their fault, Dad." "Don't tell me that," said Harry with an anger that jolted the boy's head. "You don't know what you're talking about." The car was quiet for a long time while Harry tried to compose himself, and Ron wondered what he had done wrong. Harry was feeling better by the time he parked the car in front of the shop. "Let's get some lunch," he said. He saw his son smile and nod, but felt a twinge of guilt for hollering at him. He told himself that a boy had to learn the truth about the way the world was. When they were at the shop, they had lunch at the Lincoln Pharmacy. They sat at the counter and looked through the sports page together. "You see that, Dad?" said Ron, pointed excitedly. "Mantle's batting 320. "He stinks," said Harry, laughing. "How can you say that? He's the best player in baseball. In a pig's eye. He just gets headlines because he's a New York Yankee." I don't understand why you hate the Yankees so much. Because they buy good players from teams that aren't as rich as they are. Ron launched into a long defense of his team. He pointed out that Mantle had never played for another team. He sipped his coffee and grinned. He might have his mother's face, but he's got a mind like mine, thought Harry. Dad, do you know what Mom says? Harry stopped grinning. She says that you used to like the Yankees until you couldn't get anybody to bet against them. Two of the guys from the shop who were sitting at the counter with him began to laugh. Ron looked at them and then quickly back to his father, hoping that he hadn't said anything that would make him mad again. When he saw Harry was laughing too, he relaxed. Your mother's right, said Harry, but they stink anyway. Ron grinned broadly and began to explain all over about why they were such a good team. But Harry told him to finish his chopped liver sandwich. Ron didn't understand why the men laughed at that comment, too. After lunch, they were back out on the road. Ron was used to the routine. He held the flashlight while Harry worked on the jukebox in the nameless Puerto Rican restaurant with the pungent odor smells made him dizzy. When they worked on a pool table at the Brothers' Lounge, where Ron always wondered who the brothers were, and Harry disgustedly pulled debris out of one of the pockets into which it had been shoved. Dad, do we have time for a game? Rack 'em up, said Harry. What kind of a spot are you going to give me? What do you want to play for, said Harry. 50 cents. I'll give you the break and your first miss, said Harry. Ron was tense. This was his chance to show his father that he had learned how to play the game. He was better than all of his friends, but this was different. Harry watched the determination on Ron's face as he drew the cue back and struck the ball as hard as he could. Ron had the low balls based on the one he sank off the break. Harry watched his son trying to read the table and saw that the boy hadn't really learned the game's strategy. Maybe that was better. If he didn't have a good taste of it in his mouth from early on, maybe it would leave him alone. But then Ron sank a couple of shots, and Harry saw that the kid had a stroke that revealed hours of practice. He beat his son 2 games straight and took the boy's dollar. Back in the car, Harry said, "Was that all the money that you had with you?" "Yeah." "Why did you bet it?" "I wanted to see you play your best game, Dad." "Maybe that wasn't such a good idea, Ron." "It was worth it. You beat me fair." "You shouldn't gamble what you can't afford to lose." Ron knew that his father wouldn't give him the money back. When Ron wanted to bet, his father never returned what he lost. It was only dark when Harry dropped the boy off in front of the large apartment building. "I've got 2 more calls. Tell your mother that I couldn't stop in and give this to her." He handed Ron a check for $20. "Am I going to see you next weekend?" "I don't know. Probably on Sunday. I'll call." Harry waited until he saw the boy was inside and then drove off. He had 2 more stops and 1.5 hours before he could call in for the last time. If there were no emergencies, he would have done a 14-hour day. That was part of his week on 3 nights. He could put one of the stops off, but it was probably better to get them over with, call in, and when he was done. 14. It was a bright July day in the summer of 1969. Harry had long since remarried and had 2 more children. He had buried Robert Tuck and had named his younger son after him. He had even seen William Brandt one last time. That had been particularly unpleasant, but turned out rewarding because the old bastard had finally put him in touch with one of his brothers. Now his children would have a real uncle and a real aunt and cousins that came from his side of the family. Harry had joined the Glenridge Country Club and played golf there every weekend. His friends owned businesses and were large company executives. Harry successfully hustled them for the cost of his membership, plus a bit, each year. He owned stock that he had learned about through the tips that he picked up at the club, and was now on his way to buying a shore house. Between what he made on the golf course and the ever-growing pile of cigar boxes that no one else knew about now, and what he made hustling cards in the locker room, there was always extra money. He sat outside the clubhouse with the rest of the foursome that had just finished the round and were having drinks. Two of the wives and some of the unattached friends joined the group. Harry had been a member of the club for 5 years and had just been asked to join the exclusive membership committee. Harry noticed that the woman on his right was wearing rings on her toes. "Let's face it," she said with an expansive sweep of her arm. "Life has been pretty good to us all." Harry smiled to himself and sipped his drink.